there, and welcome back to Midnight in the Mountains. I've been away for a while, but I'm ready to pick up where I left off. So if you're listening to this, thank you. On tonight's episode, Nick Valenti joins me. He is former policeman and military. He's director of NADP, North American Dogman Project, Section 3 and 5. His love of the paranormal has brought him to study cryptozoology and to prove or disprove the phenomenon. I broke this episode up into two parts. We talked for almost 2 hours, so the next part will be out next week. Alright, let's get into it.
Alright, well, we were talking off the air about LBL.
Yes.
I was saying that D.A. Roberts and I, when we were there last year, you know, we were there 1:30, 2 o'clock in the morning, because that's the best time. If you want to find anything, you want to find something at nighttime. Cryptids, animals, they all come out at night, at least the nocturnal ones, because they want to, you know, move around and go hunting. During the daytime, they're sleeping. But at nighttime, in LBL is so oppressive. First of all, the canopy, the leafy canopy above you, it just blocks out the sun. And you feel this oppressive feeling, and you have this idea in your mind that, you know, it doesn't want me here. You know, but it's so silly, because we did come upon a bunch of people near the water. They have like a beachfront over there, and we did walk around the area, but there were so many people there that we weren't going to find any sort of cryptids or anything. So we would go to the more, the areas people don't want to go to. We were like walking into the forest area during the daytime, and at nighttime, the same deal. We would park the car, and we would walk into the forest area. But like I was telling you before, it is pitch black in Land Between the Lakes, Kentucky. And I imagine it's the same thing in Tennessee, in their LBL, because they're connected by that body of water. And not only would you find cryptids out there, Sasquatch or Dogman, but you're going to find bear, you're going to find coyote, you're going to find wolves. The wolves, not so much that they don't generally bother humans, but the snakes I was telling you about, I saw over a dozen non-poisonous snakes. I saw several poisonous snakes. I know how to tell the difference between them. You can just look at them and the shape of their heads. Also, you can look at the diamonds and the shapes on the rest of their body, their long, slithery bodies over there. But besides the snakes, there's also spiders. I was observing a couple of trees over there while we were walking through during the daytime. And I can imagine at nighttime, you come up against a tree and the thing jumps on you, you know, and you're not going to die from a spider bite, but you sure as heck are going to get sick. Who wants to get bit by an insect anyway, you know? And
no. Some
of the spiders were, look, this is almost 4.5 inches. They were big, looked like a wolf spider, and a couple of them were black spiders. And all I know is that you surprise anything, a non-poisonous snake, a spider, it could bite you. And those are the things I try to get across to people when you're out there. Wear the proper clothing and have the proper equipment. Definitely have a Jeep, if you can afford it, have a GPS tracking system on you. They're only about yay big. Once again, I'm showing you because you can see me and I can see you. They're only about 5 inches. But there's a button, a special button on there that you can hit, and they'll come right for you. Now, in LBL, I don't know. I would hope they can, because the canopy is so thick. But I'll tell you, cell phones were not working.
Yeah, I believe that.
Absolutely not working. But really, people, when they go in there, they really should take a proper first aid kit and understand that that might save your life. I mean, not that you're going to get attacked by a cryptid or some or an animal or anything, but you could possibly fall down, you know, and get a stick lodged in your leg, and you got to do the first aid on that. You got to get out of there somehow. And in order to get out of there, if you're bleeding profusely, your first aid kit comes in handy. And I don't mean aspirins and little tiny wipes and some Band-Aids. I'm talking about a real first aid kit that you can actually take care of a wound or two or three, because you never know how many you're going to get when you're out there. The kit I have that I have for my personal self, I could take care of about 7 different people.
Oh, that's great.
Severe wounds. And it doesn't take that much to know how to pack a proper kit and, you know, to stop the bleeding and all that. Also, people should take bottles of water with them. And I don't mean one, you know, or two. I'm talking about at least three, because you never know. You have a wound. You want to wash it off. That's the first thing you want to do, is you want to wash it off. Also, something to eat, because if you do get lost out there in the woods, it might be several days. Something I wish we had video here. I'll show you. This is a hyper whistle. You probably heard me talk about it in the past.
I don't know that I have. I might have.
Well, I won't blow it totally, but 146 decibels it goes up to. And they have a couple of different whistles. You don't have to go to special places. You can go to Amazon and type in super whistle, you know.
I'm going
to
write that down, actually, because I just have like your old regular standard whistle that I keep in my backpack when I go hiking. But that sounds better.
The reason I actually wear this one here, and I have the super whistle also, but I wear this one here, is because if I do come across a cryptid, I'm going to try to hit it with every non-lethal thing I can first to try to dissuade it from coming at me. Now, the North American Dogman Project that I belong to, and am director of Region 3, and just recently I'm director of Region 5. That's the Northeast and the Southeast section of the United States. The thing is, when you go out there, you want to disrupt whatever is coming at you. And their hearing is probably 40 to 45 times better than ours. 146 decibels is really, really going to shock whatever's out there. The biggest thing I recommend people taking with them is bear spray, however, and learn how to use the bear spray. And I mentioned I'm with the North American Dogman Project, and we're a no-kill organization, but that doesn't mean we're not a self-defense organization either. When I go in, I expect to come back home, just like anybody else that goes into a forest area. You have a right to expect to come back home. I generally am armed. We will talk about, you know, firearms and stuff, but that's what I'm talking about. And
you if you want. I don't care.
That's right. You're from.
I'm pro firearm, so you're
people out there who would be so offended. But you know what? If a giant brown bear came up and was going to rip your face apart, I think anybody would try to shoot it. But I generally have two canisters of bear spray with me. Shoot out in a conical shot, and not just a stream, but a conical mist. And the one I purchased goes 36 feet. So I'll shoot at whatever's coming at me, and if that doesn't stop them, now I have to go on to something else. I also carry electronic flashbangs. They put out 130 decibel screeching sound, 1,200 lumens of flashing light. So I'm going to be trying to disrupt whatever's coming at me with audio and with visual. And it really works well at nighttime. I'll be very honest with you. I carry two of them, the electronic flashbangs. All you got to do is press the button, hold it for 2 seconds, and toss them. And they go off, and it's just a piercing, screaming sound. And it's bound to bother something out there.
Well, let me ask you this. How does that not affect you then and mess up your hearing and your seeing?
Well, what I wear, once again, I was going to show you, but I can't. What I wear are electronic earmuffs. And you can buy them and use them for when you go shooting firearms at a range. What they do is they magnify your hearing. So now I'm able to hear around me about 8 to 10 times better than my normal hearing. So if something's coming at me or trying to creep up on me, I could actually hear it if it's within a certain amount of feet. And like I said, well, you know, like your dog can hear like 45 times, and your cat can too. So I'm looking at a dog man or even a Sasquatch for that matter. And I'm saying to myself, well, they can probably hear super well also. Now my earmuffs, electronic earmuffs, they're giving me a slight advantage over the regular person out there that doesn't have them on, because they're not going to be able to hear what I'm able to hear. And I'm going to tell you, when you're out there, the crickets really sound loud in that. So
I bet.
Really happy with them. I'm really happy. But if something's going to creep up on me, I want to know if it's coming, you know, if it's coming at me. And I'm going to let loose with the things that I carry. I also carry a portable laser that has an attachment that splits the beam up into like 400 different beams. And that would disrupt the eyes on something out there, whether it be a bear or a coyote or whatever is going to come down at you, or a cryptid. you know, anything like that. Plus, I've expanded. I went outside the box with my thinking these days. What happens if I come across a UFO, an alien? At this point, I have firearms. I have bear spray. I have my whistle here to disrupt the ears. I have the laser to disrupt the eyes. I also carry holy water. I carry black salt, white salt, and I also carry sage. And I have like three cigarette lighters. Bic lighters are the best thing to get. Those are the best things to take with you when you're going out there in case you need to make a fire, you know, something or make a fire to signal or whatever. I mean, we're talking about at nighttime, of course. But, you know, during the daytime, if you need a fire, instead of using those ferro rods, why not just whip out the little Bic lighter that costs you $1.19 and bam, you have a flame.
I carry like one or two of those with me when I go out. And I usually like to, even if I'm like traveling somewhere for the weekend, I like to keep them on me just in case. You never know. Yeah.
So like I said, I'm actually, when I think outside the box, I'm saying, I don't know what I'm going to meet out there.
No.
Because I had done a study, and I don't know if you heard about what I did last year for 6 months straight. I took every Dogman and Sasquatch report, and I tried to contact all the people that I could with those reports. I had stopped at just under 376, but after the 6 months, I continued it also up to well over 600 people. And my percentage of people that saw a UFO type object in the sky before or after an encounter or a sighting with a Sasquatch or a Dogman. And some people saw the UFO-like object in the sky before and after. Now, I had an encounter with a Dogman back in 2013. That's back in September 13th, 2013. And after it left the area where I was, I saw a UFO-like object in the sky. So what I did was, after 6 months, I actually stopped the official count. But I continued on, and I went well over 600 people. And I either interviewed the people on the phone, I went to them in person, and it didn't matter if it was out of state. If I could reach them, I went to them out of state. And a lot of people wanted to converse with me on Messenger. So I was able to talk to them on Facebook Messenger. And some people just wanted to write to me because it's still the stigma. And people think that they're going to be made fun of. And I'm far from doing that because of my encounter. And I try to specify encounter over sighting, because a sighting is you're driving down the roadway, a dog man runs across the road. An encounter is you're on foot, you're standing there and you see it, and it's about 30, 40 feet away. That's to me, that's a big difference. But it came down to 92% of the people that had a sighting or an encounter with a dog man or a Sasquatch either saw a object in the sky before and after, both times.
I am shocked right now.
Yeah. And this is from all over the country and up into Canada. And I want to preface it with it's mostly Western Canada, because I didn't get too many reports from the Eastern section. But it still hung around the 92 percentile area. It was up into 93, and then I had more people I was talking to. But most of the time, people saw a UFO-type light or object in the sky, along with their sighting or encounter of a Dogman or a Sasquatch. And I'm trying to say to myself now, were they put down here by an alien race? Or are they the alien race that came down here? Or is it possible that I'm getting ahead of myself here, but I'm also thinking that Dogman and Sasquatch might be interdimensional. They might be going through portals.
That's my belief. I think they are.
Well, that's what I'm trying to get together with all my research, because not only am I a field investigator, I'm boots on the ground out there. That's my first love. I love being out there. I try to get out there as much as possible. But I'm also a 14 researcher, and that meaning that I will go not only on the internet, but books. I'll order books. I'll go to libraries. When I'm in other states, I'll go to their small libraries, because those small little libraries and the small little bookstores all have old books that either nobody has ever taken out for 50, 60, 100 years, or the little bookstores that sell the stuff, they've got like books in there that have dust on them an inch thick, and you never know what you're going to come across.
Yeah. Yeah. Sometimes you come across stuff in research and you're like, holy crap, this is, you weren't expecting it, but when you find it, it's like gold.
Oh, it's absolutely. And it's worth it.
Yeah.
If I could find one thing out of a magazine or a book, it's totally worth the price, because it just goes down into my research log books, and I've got tons and tons of them. I handwrite everything. I don't really put it on computer. I handwrite all the field researches I've been on. And I've been north, south, east, and west in the United States. I've been up into Canada. I've been down into Mexico. And like I said on other shows, my mantra is to prove or to disprove the existence of these cryptids. And so far, to me, Dogman exists mainly because I had an encounter and I saw it with my own eyes. Chupacabra, I went across the border from Texas into Mexico, and I saw what was told to me by the, I want to call him a farmer, but he's a rancher farmer, and he had shot it because it had torn apart a couple of his sheep and one of his goats. And this thing was, I want to say anywhere from 40 to 42 inches long from the butt all the way to the nose. It had bluish skin. It had no hair. It did have a ridge line across the top of its head all the way down the back. Ridge line of I guess fur, some kind of hair, but it was only like a half an inch in height, and he had shot this thing. And what we found out sending back some of the DNA from it, because he allowed me to take some of it, you know, samples from the so-called chupacabra, and it turned out to have, it was like 48% wolf, 45% coyote, and then unknown for the rest. So I'm thinking that this thing is part wolf, part coyote, because it looked really funny. And the reason it didn't have hair on its body like a wolf or a coyote is because it had a skin disease. And I could see the skin disease right on it. And the skin disease, a veterinarian described what this does to the animal. It drives them crazy. It also inhibits their normal hunting prowess. Normally they can hunt when they're out there. They'll go after deer, they'll go after rabbits and such. They'll go after any kind of waterborne fowl or anything like that. But they're just incapacitated in their hunting prowess. So what they do is they go after domestic animals like dogs and sheep and goats and chickens and stuff like that. And that's the reason why a lot of people in farms have reported seeing these chupacabras, because they're going after easy prey. I mean, a chicken, they're kind of cooped up in an area. Even though they're fast, they can grab them really quick. A lamb's not going to fight back, you know, sheep. You know, so that's what they go after out there. But I got to see this thing with my own two eyes, and I'm saying to myself, well, I guess this is what they call a chupacabra.
Yeah, that's sad for the animal that has to suffer like that.
I have no idea where or how they caught the disease, the skin disease. But it's prevalent, because I have a couple of friends that live in Texas, and they've seen these animals on the roadways because they drive at nighttime. And, you know, Texas is a big state. You can go down a roadway for, 50, 60 miles before you see anybody or a town or anything at all. And they'll see all kinds of animals out there. And these gentlemen have told me that, you know, they've seen these things. And I don't know, I guess they just caught the disease out there. Like if your dog or cat went out in the local forest area and picked up a tick or two, they caught this disease, and it must drive them absolutely crazy.
Well, that's like, I mean, we've had problems with our dogs getting mange because a fox will come around the chicken coop.
Mm.
So it's kind of the same thing.
Yeah, they're going to pick up a disease just like you and I could pick up something from somebody in a, you know, that we come in close contact with in a department store or a supermarket. But, yeah, the LBL one was something. I've been out on a lot more a couple months back. I took a full team of seven. We took two ATV gators with us. Those are six-wheeled ATV vehicles. And what we found was footprints in the snow. And I'm going to have to do more research on how to get snow footprints into a cast, because what I thought was these were not bare footprints. Because in Pennsylvania, up in the Pocono, we have black bear. And I'm going to tell you, it was the size of not my hand so much, but your hand. That's a black bear footprint. The footprints we found were approximately, once again, I'm putting my hands up, like 8 inches across, 12 to 13 inches from the back to the front.
Wow.
The and this was not a bear print at all. And this, the area that I was searching with the team was north of the Poconos Resort area. And as I was speaking with you before the show, four different sources, there we go. That'll be the better word. Four different sources reported this to me within a 4 to 5 day period, going back a few months back. And it was two couples and two individual people. And they all had the same story, except it was in the same area. And one of them actually had what I want to call an encounter because it scratched their car. The other people, they were coming to a T intersection, and this dogman, upright canine, as they described it to me, looked like a wolf on 2 feet, ran across the roadway. Now, one of the sources said that it went from right to left. The other two sources said it went from left to right. And then the one couple, they were coming home at nighttime, just when the sun was coming down. And the wife looked to her right, and she saw a bipedal cryptid. I might as well say cryptid, because that's the only way you can describe it, running alongside their car. And she goes, honey, go faster. And he's like, what, why? And she goes, look, he looked over to the right, and he didn't hesitate. He just jammed his foot on the pedal, and they got up to 60, 70 miles an hour in no time. And for a while, this bipedal creature was actually pacing them. He didn't look to see when he lost it, 50 or 60 miles an hour, but evidently they were doing at least 40 because it reached out and she heard a scrape on the side of the car. Now, these people own a body shop, and I don't want to give out too much, but they did say I could say that they do own a body shop, and he took pictures of it. He showed me. And they repaired, after they took the pictures, they repaired the damage that was done to the car. But it scratched the passenger side of the car, and it was a pretty big scratch. It looked like it hit it with not the thumb so much, but the other four fingers and the nails, and it scratched the side of their car. And it went right through the clear coat and right through the paint. And the reason they fixed it so quick before we were able to get up there is it was a 2 week lag time before I got a team up there, but they fixed it quick because they didn't want anybody to know what it was. And they didn't want to lose business because, these two crazy people are talking about, a dog man of all things, what next, the Sasquatch, what next, a Gugway or something like that. They were afraid of ridicule. Let's put it that way. And they didn't want to lose business. And this is what I find, Laura, also, a lot of times people call me up and say, I'm going to tell you, but you're not going to put my name out. You're not going to give my state. And I'm not going to tell you, where, but this happened to me. And then they ask me my opinion, should we tell anybody else? And I tell them it's if you're comfortable with it. Because even though it's 2022, Laura, this day and age, people are still afraid of being ridiculed and made fun at.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
They might be up for a higher position at their job. And who wants to put them in charge if, this guy's a lunatic or this lady is a crazy person and they're seeing these seven and a half foot cryptids running around on two legs. Wolves are supposed to run around on four legs and this thing's running on two legs. I just don't get it. I mean, this is 2022, but people are still being ridiculed about it. As far as I'm concerned, I'm out there. Person wants to tell me, oh, you're full of it. You didn't see what you saw. Seriously, you're going to tell me I didn't see what I saw? I don't make anything off of this. As you know, I don't have a program or anything like that. I don't try to make money from cryptozoology. It's a love of mine. It's a passion. I actually took two certification courses a year and a half ago. They were both 6 months long in order to up my knowledge on cryptozoology. And I'm constantly reading different books on it, besides running several Facebook pages and constantly researching and trying to put out information for people out there. I don't make any money out of this. I make my own money. I have plenty that I make. I don't really need to go there and, sell anything. The shirts and hats that I had made up, were members they wanted me to have them made up because they wanted them. And they purchased them for exactly what I got them for plus shipping. And that was it. So I don't make any money off of these things. That's not where I'm at.
Mm-hmm. You really got to love the paranormal to be in it. Because unless you're Zach Bagans, you're not really making money.
No, not at all. I mean, I had patches made up, you know, so that my people can have something to identify with. I had mugs made up. Here, I guess I could show you, but, you know, they wanted stuff. So,
yeah,
but I don't make a profit on it. I mean, you're not going to make a profit on cryptozoology. I don't care who you are, and unless you're one of these charlatans who has a YouTube show and, you know, they're collecting money, you know, so that you can be a member of their podcast or broadcast or whatever. And those are the people that are actually making money. What I find is, and I say that they're more like charlatans, is because they're faking people out and they're putting fake shows up there and they're putting out fake information, anything sensational, you know, that's how they're making their money, sensationalism.
Yeah, I don't like that. I mean, and everybody that is into this, you know, it makes the rest of us look crazy when you got someone out there claiming all these extraordinary things.
Well, that's what I said. That's the reason why I don't try to make any money off it, because I don't want to. I just find it super interesting. Mm-hmm. I get 10, 15, sometimes 20 calls or people sending messages to me every week about an encounter or a sighting that they've had. Different states and different counties all over New Jersey, going out. Oh, geez. Australia. I have John Kershaw. He's my man on the ground. He's our boots on the ground in Australia. He runs his own podcast. What is it? Creepy Cryptids, I think he calls it. And he reports into me on a monthly or bi-monthly basis and tells me about the stuff he has there in Australia. I mean, Australia is just waiting to kill you. You know, that place is crazy out there. You go out in the jungle areas over there, I mean, alligators, poisonous snakes, spiders, you name it. They have everything there. I mean, even a kangaroo will come up to you and try to punch you or kick you, you know, out there. He was telling me about, but he had a few encounters. He was out fishing in a boat, and we're talking about in Australia, and this dog man was in the water coming towards him, and he got out of there. He's like, I didn't know they could swim. I said, of course they could swim. A dog can dog paddle. A wolf can doggy paddle and come. And he's seen this wolf-like head coming after him, and he's seen arms with claws on it. And once again, I'm making hand gestures. And, you got to excuse me. I'm Italian, so what can I say? But he's telling me about, you know, it's clawing the water and it's coming at him faster and faster. And he had this little 10 horsepower engine and he hit the engine and he's going away and he kept going. And for a while there, he wasn't making any headway against it. And finally he started going because the stream that he bumped into started to pick up and help him. And he got the heck out of there. But it wasn't the first time that in that area or in that body of water that he was in, that they had a reporting of a wolf-like creature in the water going after people. Two guys were in there fishing and they saw it coming after them. They got on their oars and they got out of there, totally out of there. That was another story he was telling me about. And John went high tech. He now has a drone with a really nice camera and putting out some really good, you know, footage out there. Unfortunately, no Sasquatch yet. No dog man, you know, yet, but he's out there all the time. He's out there all the time doing it. And, I mean, you know, so I'm in constant contact with people throughout the world who and United States, you know, are telling me about sightings and encounters that they've had. And it's just such an interesting topic. And I believe within the next two and a half years that the government will actually come out and not give all these redacted articles to us and tell us that, hey, look, Sasquatch is real. Bigfoot's real out there. You know, UFOs are real. We just didn't want to tell you because we didn't want to panic anybody. But I kind of believe in the next 2.5 years, Laura, they're going to come out with it. People are going to start to say, see, I told you. But
I was going to say, I don't think that they will. I don't know. I don't have much trust in them, but I'm not much into UFOs, but I mean, I hear little bits and pieces and everybody's all mad because basically we've been getting this big thing coming and then the drop comes and there's nothing there. And I've also heard tons of people talk about how bad it would be if they actually came out and said Bigfoot's real, because then they would have to do this whole thing with logging industries where they're going to have to shut down like logging forests, and then all these people are out of jobs and the industry would go down and everything. And there's just so much money to be lost on it. So I don't think that they would ever do that. I mean, maybe they would, I don't know. But you see down in like South America, where I've heard that UFO sightings are just broadcasted right on their daily news. So I don't know.
Yeah, they'll show it. I'll tell you, last year I was watching the History Channel and they were showing a logging camp up in Canada, quite close to the U.S. border. And they were filming something there. It had nothing to do with a cryptid or anything like that. And out of the forest came a log. I want to say it was, according to the guy on the History Channel, it was about 12 inches around and it was about 10 feet long. It wasn't cut up. It was like, you know, something, a tree that was down, and it came flying out of the forest area at the machines the logging company had out there. And this thing traveled about a good 40, 50 feet. Now, in order to prove that it was probably a cryptid, I don't know any bear that would be able to do that. You know,
I don't either.
But in order to prove that it was probably a cryptid, most likely a Sasquatch, they had a Hollywood stunt coordinator, the guy that does the FX stuff, and they had him put together a machine that could toss a log. The best he could do was toss a log of the same size, about 20 feet. But this thing went almost 50 feet. So something was out there, and something was awfully angry with them.
Yeah. You know,
throw something at them like that. I mean, come on. Give me an explanation. Now, what I wanted to say was, they had people out there filming, and they filmed this thing. This thing was flying from the forest area through the air, and it hit the ground. So, I mean, they weren't out there doing a movie or anything. They were just out there filming for the logging company. For whatever reason, they had them out there. And it was absolutely crazy. So I what I wanted to tell you also is that I had, a few months back, put in through the Freedom of Information Act when I heard that the government was letting stuff out on UFOs, because not only do I do cryptozoology now, that's my first passion, but I branched out to UFOlogy, also the paranormal from when I was younger. I'm picking up more on that also, because I'm trying to combine it all to see maybe there's a connection.
Yeah, I think there is, definitely.
Some kind of connection. And as far as portals, there must be a portal, because...
Oh, yeah.
Like my favorite phrase is where the footprint ends. You'll see Sasquatch footprints, and then it ends right there. And there's no place for it to have gone. So where did it go? Maybe it went through a portal. Now, yes, they can go translucent, you know, if they're further away from you, and you may just look, they may blend in with the scenery, and you may just look right through them. But I think there's some sort of a portal that they go through. The same thing with the Dogman, because I've followed tracks, like 15, 16 tracks on the ground, left foot, right foot, and suddenly it disappears. And a lot of times we were not near any trees, because Dogman has been known to climb trees. And I should backtrack, because I wanted to complete that thought. When we were in the northern area above the Poconos a few months back, there was snow on the ground. What I thought to bring with me was this aerosol cans of, how could I put it, insulation. And we sprayed it inside the Dogman tracks that was in the snow. These were pristine tracks, I'm telling you. It didn't work. It did not work. I wound up with globs of gook, and that was it. We did find several slash marks on some of the trees where the nails dug in. We did not find any of the Dogman there. However, it was funny to note this, and I know a podcaster pretty well. Her name is Bettina Moss. She had a sighting near her parents' house, and in the backyard of her parents' house is a big cornfield. And it just so happens that where the sightings happened in the upper northern upper area of the Poconos that we went to. It just happens that both sides of the roadway where these people saw the dog man run across the road, they were both cornfields. So I am trying to put together what this is all about. I mean, are they feeding off all the old corn that has dropped over there? Is it just a good hiding area? What? You know,
I've
put together.
I've heard her tell her story. I listen to Josh a lot on Paranormal Roundtable.
Josh Turner, yeah.
Yeah, she told her story on there. That's where I heard it. And I've also heard, I'm sure you know of Shannon LeGros. She does Into the Fray. I should send it to you when we're done here if you haven't listened to it already. It's one of my favorite episodes. It's also one of the scariest episodes I think she has. It's called like Dog Man on Temple Road or something like that in Ohio. Right. And it's this guy tells the story of when he was running track in high school. So he would run at night because it was cooler out and he got paced out by a dog man. So, and it's a terrifying story. So I won't spoil it and I'll send it to you so you could listen to it. But I don't know what to think. And I also do have a friend. I had told you when I was talking to you about scheduling to talk to you that I had a friend when we were much younger. So like a little over 15 years ago, he saw a dog man cross the road and it just kind of jumped down like 1-2 strides across the street and just gone. And he was driving on a back road with his other buddy. So there was two of them. And these guys are like farmers, no bullshit. Mm. You know, they're not going to make this up. And later on down the road, he found out that his dad had seen the exact same thing. And like probably a couple years later, he was watching TV, some paranormal show or something, and there was a description of a hellhound on TV, and he said, that's exactly what I saw. Now, I mean, if you look up hellhound, I've seen different descriptions of them, but what my friend said he saw, it was like, I think brown hair, it was very skinny, it was on two legs, and kind of like a greyhound looking thing.
Mm.
But scared the absolute shit out of him. And he told me that he slept with a gun next to his bed ever since he saw that. And that's been years ago. And he does farm work out in the fields. So, and they work well into the night sometimes. So he tells me that he lights that tractor up with every possible light that is on that front, back, sideways, everything. And he said he's really scared sometimes at night. He's afraid something's going to come out again. So, I mean, that really, and he doesn't get scared of much. He could care less about some stuff, but that really impacted him.
But you know, also a hellhound generally, from what I know in my research and from speaking to people that have seen them, and generally, they've seen them down in the southern states, you know, Texas and New Mexico and whatnot. They're generally on 4 feet. Dogman is generally on 2 feet. I don't know why they prefer bipedal, but generally that's what they do prefer. He's been out there. Dogman has been out there since white men in the United States has reported it since the late 1700s. Loggers have reported it. They had the siege of Lockett Ranch in Taylor, Mississippi in 1948. It was a year-long siege. And the Chickasaw Indians had a burial ground in this area where this man had bought a lot of land and he had built one of those real type of log cabins, you know, with the big thick logs and everything. And he moved his family there and they were being attacked by dog men over a period of 1 year. So it's like the phenomenon of dog man hasn't just occurred in the last 5 or 6 years. It's been out there. The Native American Indians know all about them, yet they will not speak with us about them for many reasons, because number one, it's bad luck, and you're going to bring down these dogmen upon them, you know, and bring down evil spirits. Number two, we're white. We're not Native Americans. They really don't want to speak to us about it. They feel like, you know, we're encroaching on their religion, on their life. Also, it's been known that dogmen have been protectors of Native American burial grounds. And I'll have to bear that one out, because back in September 13th, 2013, where I had my encounter, I was in the Watchung Reservation area in New Jersey, trying to cut across the Watchung Reservation and get home quicker that on that wonderful night. And I find out 6 months later that there's actually a Lenape Indian burial ground up there in that area. Now, Watchung Reservation is used by thousands and thousands of people with their families all the time. There's a big oval right at the top of the mountain over there, and people have barbecues there. They have swing sets over there. They, you know, they play baseball over there. There's a large museum, wildlife museum, in the area. There are trails. As a matter of fact, I've walked those trails, oh God, I have to say at least 200 times ever since I was younger. And, you know, throughout that whole area. And the best I've ever come across was hearing a bear grunt. And I got out of there and seeing several large snakes. And actually, first time ever seen my first white snake. Lord, this thing was 3 inches around and about 6 inches long. This thing was huge. I was walking along a trail. I just stopped. That was it. Go ahead. You go your way. I'm waiting. You know, and it just went its way. But that's the area I had it in, and there just happened to be a Lenape Indian burial ground up there. So it's very odd, and you know, to me, that they're in certain areas, and I'm just wondering who or what may have been up there years before. Because like I said, those loggers back in the late 1700s, they came across a dog man, and one of the loggers actually shot it with a rifle, and it didn't do anything, didn't do a darn thing to it. So, I mean, it started way back then with us reporting with, you know, white Europeans, and has continued throughout to this very day.
What's the oldest case you've ever come across?
You mean research-wise? Or
Yeah.
Well, that one I was just talking about in the late 1700s.
With okay.
The up in, I guess they were up in the Michigan area. So that was the latest case, you know, way back when. There's been other cases in the 1800s and throughout almost every state, down in Louisiana, you have the Rougarou, you know, the French call it the La Rougarou, or the La Garou. And, it's not just a werewolf. It's a very large bipedal wolf. I mean, anytime you're tipping 7 feet tall, I think you're going out of the realm of a werewolf, because a werewolf is generally a human turning into a wolf. Now, you might pick up, you know, a couple inches here or there if you're a 6 foot man, but you sure is not going to go seven and a half feet. These things are in a wolf-like form all the time. A werewolf is supposed to change from a human into a werewolf and then back again. I kind of, like I said, I try to prove or disprove, and I kind of find that hard to believe, because like the only thing that really goes from one thing into another thing is like the larvae that change into a butterfly. You know,
that's what I was thinking as soon as you started saying that. Yeah.
You never see it change back from a butterfly into that larva again, or, you know, so it's like, how is this all happening here? How does it, you know, just,
I don't know. It blows my mind. I mean, it's the same thing with skinwalkers, the same way. I just don't, I mean, I guess I believe it, but it's just, it just blows your mind, you know?
I have a friend of mine who's part of NADP now, but back then when we were talking, he was videotaping, and mind you, he lives in Southwest Texas area. He was in a mountainous area over there, and he was videotaping the area for himself, because he saw some really nasty looking vultures out there and stuff, and birds, and he was taping the area, and he saw a creature on 4 feet go near a boulder and stop and actually turn and look at him. Now, he was about 200 feet away, and he was in his vehicle, and he's videotaping this thing, and he's zooming in as best as he can, and this creature that best he could describe is it looked like a coyote. It went behind a boulder and then another rock. And then when it finally appeared, it appeared on 2 feet like it was a human, and then went up a little valley, a little canyon that was up where he was filming, and disappeared. And he says, you know, that's the strangest thing I ever seen in my life. Now, I'm thinking that maybe he did see a skinwalker. Now, remember, there's different types of skinwalkers out there. There's the kind that will change into an animal and, you know, change back into a human and then maybe a different type of an animal. And generally, it's a Native American medicine man. And then there's the Native American medicine man that will wear like the
pelt.
The skin or the pelt of a wolf or a coyote, plus the head dressing and everything. And he doesn't change. He just has his mystical type of powers, but he still stays in a human form with that pelt on him. And he looks awfully menacing. Let's put it that way. He looks awfully menacing.
So when they let me ask you this, because I've never heard of that type where they just put that stuff on. And then what kind of, I mean, does putting that on, I'm sure they do some kind of like ritual or something.
Right.
What kind of powers does that give them?
Supposedly it gives them whatever dark powers that it wants to use, whatever dark magic it wants to use to curse somebody. And it brings to mind a story of these people that were in Arizona, and they were cursed by a medicine man dressed exactly the way I was just telling you. And they did something to offend him, and he cursed them. And 2 days later, the husband's calling the doctor, the local doctor, to get over here quick because his wife just took sick. Here's a woman that never was sick a day in her life, and bam, she was sick. The doctor got there, and by the time the doctor walked into the door, she was dead. And
he just
moved his two children. He had two young children and himself, and they moved out of there right away because the doctor was explaining to him after he told the doctor what happened. And he says, listen, we came across this guy in town. We didn't mean to offend him, you know, but I hit my horn and my wife was going, watch out, you're going to get run over. And he took offense, evidently. And it was a Native American, and I guess it was this medicine man.
Boy, I'm sure going to make sure that my road rage stays under control from now on.
It doesn't matter. Don't hit the horn, especially when you're Southwest. But what happens, I mean, I guess she spoke. She said something, and they startled the guy. And, I mean, he was walking against the light. Let's put it that way. And, you know, but the wife said something out the window. She goes, hey, we could have hit you. And he looked right at her, dead in the eyes, you know, and I guess he must have done something because she was dead. The doctor walked in the door and he goes, Doc, you're too late. And he tried to help her. Nothing. Did the defibrillator on her chest and everything, hit her up with adrenaline. Nothing. She was not brought back to life. Laura, I'm talking about a 35-year-old woman here.
Oh, my gosh.
Every day in her life, and she died.
I'm 34. That's 1 year older than me. That's like,
just don't go out to the Southwest in the next couple of years. You know, just it depends. It depends on if you believe about in it. You know, it's just like when you're down in Louisiana, they have their rituals down there, and they could make a life-size type of effigy of you and start sticking pins in it. And you know, if you believe in it enough, it'll affect you. The mind does affect things.
I mean, I believe in that kind of stuff. Like, say, you know, if somebody does that to you and you don't believe in it, I think it's still going to affect you no matter what. I mean, that stuff's powerful. I've witnessed firsthand, like, not any, like, dark magic, but just recently I went away. I was supposed to be on a trip and stay overnight at the Shanley Hotel, but I couldn't even stay there because that place was so, so heavy and so dark. Aww. I went and got an Airbnb. I left because I couldn't do it.
All right. So that's all the time we have for this episode. And the other half will be posted next week. So if you made it this far, thanks for listening. Take care and see you later.